Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Justice Dofano to my right and I are very happy to welcome back now visiting Justice, Justice Bill Brigham. And
thanks
he's going to sit
Judge.
With us today. We do have one case on our 9 o'clock docket, then we'll take a brief recess. And we have two cases on our 10:30 docket. The first case is Jones versus Cortez. If the clerk will please announce counsel. Ms. Maher?
Thank you. May it please the court. I want to address the brief of the appellant, of the appellee, excuse me, because I think that the court has already read the briefs and is well acquainted with what the arguments are. And as far as in this court's records, the appellee has made two points regarding our points of error. One is that there was failure to properly object to the court's charge, and this is on the first ground of error, and also that the requested record was not a full record of the transcript of the trial. As far as the failure to properly object, we requested from the court reporter and the court the clerk of the court, number one, the requested jury charge that we had filed, and we also requested our objections to the basic charge that the judge was going to give. I don't believe that there was an objection on the record to the jury's note regarding the judge's explanation to the jury that the defendant would have to know, or the defendant would have to have knowledge of the occurrence at the time of the incident. But anyway, as you can see from our brief, we did file our copy, file mark copy of the clerk's of the court reporter's, clerk's record, excuse me, of our file marked charge regarding the fact that our appellant was the invitee. The reason we asked for a partial record is because there was no indication as far as an objection to the charge, and the court reporter said that there was no charge filed. And since we did have the charge filed, and since every single petition we have in this case mentioned that she was an invitee, we wanted to show that all the evidence showed that she was an invitee. And this is the appellant, of course. Now, with the appellee, if you look at the record, the clerk's record, it shows that there was a general denial and there was an affirmative defense. The affirmative defense was basically the appellee saying that it was the sole proximate cause of the appellant as far as the her injuries. There was nothing nothing in the record indicating that there was a dispute pertaining to the fact that she was an invitee. The thing as far as on the record, when we weren't able to get the objection from the charge, and as I said, we had the charge taken from the pattern jury charges as far as on an invitee. The court ignored that and gave one on the licensee. It wasn't even one of the charges that said, you know, if it's in dispute, you can have a licensee or have the jury determine if there was a licensee or if there was a invitee. So we had objected to that, but when the clerk told us that we hadn't filed our requested charge, which we had, and it was right complying with the pattern jury charges, and you can see that in our brief on, I think it's Exhibit 2, we went ahead and ordered the portion of the transcript, which is the direct examination of Tammy Jones, showing that she did have evidence that she was an invitee. Now, the other thing that the appellee complained about was as far as the partial record. The thing is, the Texas Supreme Court has construed the fact that the clerk's record and the reporter's record should be liberally allowed to be, I think the word is courts must construe the, and they have the rules for the court reporter's record supplementation and the reporter's record liberally, so their decisions turn on substance rather than procedural technicalities. Now, appellee's counsel asked for an extension of time, and it was unopposed. And if he wanted any portions of the record, in addition to the fact he's saying it's because it wasn't in the reporter's record, but our motion for a new trial and our request, our notice of appeal, has down the specific grounds that we were going to appeal, and those are the grounds that are before this court. So, as I said, I believe that that's just a technicality. The last thing, as far as on the motion allow us to bring in the Carolina Cortez, who was the person who was a resident of the house, and she was the one who Tammy Jones, as a licensed vocational nurse, was taking care of her son, who was an infant, and I brought up portions where even Natalie Fernandez, the owner of the house, she was the aunt of the child, and she was showing Tammy exactly what the hospital told them they had to do when they discharged the infant from the hospital. But anyway, as far as the agreed scheduling order, you can see, I believe it's the course record number 16, where we have made on the first page, I think it was on experts, we had a couple of revisions that I made, and I went ahead and initialed. And then if you look at the last page, the judge writes in at the end, and this is after it's handed. It's been signed by both parties, and it's been handed to the court. The judge writes in that there's not going to be any, without leave of court, any joinder of parties. The problem is, before that time, if you look in the record, there was two motions to compel. One motion to compel was asking the court to please order the defendant to give us the location of Carolina Cortez, who had moved from the resident. She had been there a year, living there a year, and she had moved by the time that we had started discovery. We took the deposition. The deposition is in the record with our motion to compel, a portion of it, asking about where the whereabouts are. She's very evasive. And then when we tried to get her served, we have the certified mail where we have it was vacant, the address that we were given. The judge would never order the defense to give us a proper, even though there was a number of ways she could have found out exactly where she was. We finally.
So you did attempt service at the North Carolina address. That was provided to you in a response to an interrogatory?
Yes, Your Honor. At first, there wasn't any response. It was just listed. And then we asked for a motion.
Wait a second. It was just listed.
It was just listed as she was a person with relevant knowledge.
Okay. But so her name was given to you, just no address.
Exactly. But no address.
So a supplemental answer to interrogatories was filed?
Yes, Your Honor, and it did have that down. But when we went ahead and did send, and we have that it's in the record too. We sent in a certified mail to her. It comes back vacant, and what we figured out was that at that point she had moved into. She was living with, according to the deposition of the defendant, she was living with relatives of her husband. And so then when they moved back into the North Carolina address, then we were able to get the Secretary of State to serve. And they were served well in advance. I think it was in early 2008. It's down in the record as far as when she was served. I believe I started in 2007 asking for information on her. But she was served, and she was in default at the time of the trial. The thing is, there was nothing that delayed anything, and the reason we didn't serve her even sooner was because the judge wrote down on the scheduling order we had to have leave of the court before we could bring her in. We filed it like we would in federal court, where you have the motion for leave to file with the petition behind it. Now, the allegations in the Fifth Amendment petition, and this is the distinction between an amended petition and one bringing in joining a party, there was no new allegations whatsoever in our amended petition against the defendant. There was no new allegations of damages. The only thing we did was we brought in the defendant, or Carolina Cortez, or tried to bring her in as a defendant. And as you can see, the defense also, or the appellee, states that in defiance of the court's order, we had her served, and that's not true at all. And you can see from the record, the court crosses out where it's striking the petition in that. She just didn't allow us to join Carolina Cortez. And I can't remember which one it is, but there is the last scheduling order, or the last order on our motion to strike, I believe it was, our Fifth Amendment petition. The court didn't grant the motion to strike the Fifth Amendment petition until well after that point. And the reason being is because I did go to the court, and I had several motions to bring in Carolina Cortez, and basically the judge said the last one was, well, have you gotten her served? And I said, no, we have to have permission from the court before we can serve her. And the judge says, well, I'm just worried about her due process rights. So at that point, we filed the petition thinking that, well, that's the concern of the court. And the judge, of course, didn't hold me in contempt or anything else because she understood. And she even said that, and that's why she crossed out as far as striking the petition. There was no indication that, and there was no grounds for it because a delay of trial, the rules 39, Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, say that that basically it should be allowed joinder of parties. I believe it's Rule 37, additional parties. Before a case is called to trial, additional parties, necessary proper parties to the suit, may be brought in either by plaintiff or defendant upon such terms the court may prescribe, but not at a time in a manner to unreasonably delay the trial of this case. But if you look at when we started to try and bring her in after getting the information, you know, where the location was of Carolina Cortez, and you look at the motions to compel, we even have a motion to compel as far as trying to get, which we had to have a continuance, trying to get the deposition arranged with the defense for the orthopedic surgeon. And we have 4 or 5 pages of notes where we had dates where we contacted them, they agreed to it, then they quashed the deposition, and that's in the record also. So as far as cooperation from the defense in trying to get these things done, we did everything feasibly possible. Now, as I said, I don't believe that we had on the record our objection to when the judge got the note from the jury and they had deliberated 3 hours on whether, you know, on negligence. And they wrote a note out, and they asked whether or not what time, if it was at the time of the occurrence, when would the defendant have to have knowledge? And the judge said, because she gave a licensee a charge, and she said then not only did they have to have knowledge of it, which is what the licensee, it's not constructive knowledge or knew or should have known. The charge she gave was that of a licensee that she had to know. So then they asked, well, when did she have to know? And basically she says, at the time of the occurrence. Well, it was undisputed that Natalie Fernandez, the defendant, who was the owner of the house and the one who was the defendant, was at work. And that was never an issue, that she was at work at the time. So when she said at the time of the occurrence, the one issue where we had the floor was hyper slippery, according to what she told Tammy Jones, the second issue being that she allowed Carolina Cortez to continue to mop the floors, even though she knew it was hyper slippery and also that Tammy Jones was there, basically that threw out the mopping theory as far as our case. So for those reasons, Your Honors, we don't believe that the appellant received a fair trial, and we would ask the court to reverse the decision. Thank you.
Can you clarify for me the exact basis why you think she was an invitee as opposed to a licensee?
Your Honor, I think that because she was, there was a mutual benefit for both of them. It was Natalie Fernandez was the one that, my understanding, and in fact, Carolina Cortez doesn't even speak English. So Natalie arranged to have the licensed vocational nurse to come in to take care of the baby. That was the reason that she was discharged from the hospital. And you can see from Tammy Jones' testimony as far as all the things that she had to do, because the child was on had a tracheotomy. He was a very, very sick child, and she had to be there 8 hours a day. And And that's what she was doing. So that
So Natalie hired her on behalf of the Carolina?
Natalie, the owner of the house, asked her to come in and then showed Tammy, and that's in the record as far as showing her exactly what she had to do according to what the hospital had showed Natalie. So there was no communication between Tammy Jones and Carolina Cortez, and an invitee being a guest in the house or a neighbor coming over is a whole different thing. Both of them were getting benefits. Tammy was being paid by the Pathways, which was the nursing service, and then Natalie was able to get the services for her child relatively free of charge. And so basically that was one of the distinctions between a licensee and an invitee. And as I said, Your Honors, if there was any dispute, then the charge that should have been given was one that has the jury determine whether or not it was a licensee or an invitee.
So if Carolina was the person you were trying to add to the case, what would your cause of action be against her?
The cause of action would have been mopping the floor and not warning Tammy Jones that the floor had been mopped and was wet.
And so you would have stayed with your premises defect theory of your case?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that, Tammy had testified that Natalie had told her that several people had slipped and fallen when the floor was not wet, and that Carolina Cortez was one of those people. So Carolina had knowledge of the floor and its condition before she started mopping. And she did that while Tammy Jones was there and without any warning. And that would have been our theory, Your Honor.
And Carolina was the one who was kind of in charge of the housekeeping aspect?
I don't know if she was in charge of it, Your Honor, but I think that she did the housekeeping, yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mulver. Mr. Beard.
May it please the court. This case presents a classic example of a litigant, Ms. Jones, who had a disappointing result at trial and then filed an appeal attempting to blame the trial court for that disappointing outcome. My client, Natalia Fernandez, was found not liable for Ms. Jones' injuries by a unanimous jury. Now, Ms. Jones contends that the judgment wouldn't have been entered if she had been allowed to bring in Carolina Cortez and if the trial court had submitted the proper question to the jury. Well, I'm gonna address those arguments made by my opponent, but I think that it's important at the outset for this court to take just a second to take a step back and realize what this case is really all about. This case is really about delay and about the failure to abide by the trial court's orders and by the rules of procedure. Delay in bringing in a party who you believe is culpable and responsible for your alleged injuries, and a failure to follow the orders of the court in terms of bringing in those parties, when you can bring them in, and a failure to also follow the rules with respect to jury questions, objecting, making proper objections to the jury questions. That's what this case is all about. I'd like to now address my opponent's arguments. She did not file a reply brief, but she did take issue with some of the things set forth in our brief, and I'm going to briefly address those and then go into the substance. With respect to the failure to object to the court's charge, she, if I understood her correctly, she conceded here at oral argument that she never even made an objection to the jury, to the jury's note back to the trial judge. She never made an objection on the record, and therefore she waived that. That's pretty clear. But what she didn't point out, and what we did point out, is that she also made no objection to the jury question that the trial court, after hearing all of the evidence, determined was appropriate. So what we really have here is a failure to object to the trial court's charge. She never obtained a ruling on any of her objections. And so the trial court quite properly charged the jury based on Ms. Jones's status as a licensee rather than an invitee. With respect to that jury question, the evidence supported that question. Now, I know Chief Justice Livingston, you briefly went into that at the end of Ms. Mayer's argument about what the evidence showed, and I think it's important to point out that Natalia Fernandez did not hire Tammy Jones. There is no evidence of that in the record. As a matter of fact, this isn't reflected in the record, but the arrangements for her...
It don't go outside the record. We're bound by the record.
Well, the record is clear, again, that Natalia Fernandez did not hire Tammy Jones. There was also no evidence of a mutual economic benefit to Natalia Fernandez. She received no economic benefit by having Tammy Jones perform those medical services. Tammy Jones was there to provide care for the little kid, Jesse Torres, and that's the only reason she was there. So clearly the trial court was correct in charging the jury based on her status as a licensee rather than an invitee. The closest the testimony ever came to an invitee was, and the only thing that my opponent has pointed out that's actually in the record with respect to the issue, is that when she came over, she walked through, Natalia Fernandez walked her through what needed to be done with respect to the little boy's care. Well, but that was done because, as she admits, Carolina Cortez didn't speak Spanish, or she spoke Spanish. She didn't speak English, so you had to have a translator there to tell her what to do, and that's what Natalia Fernandez did. She just told her what needed to be done. She didn't derive any economic benefit at all from having her there on the premises. So there was no evidence to warrant the submission of a jury question with respect to her status as an invitee. But even then, let's assume that there was. There's still no harmful error, because there was no evidence sufficient that we would have still won, or Natalia Fernandez would have still prevailed at trial, if she had been charged, if the jury had been charged with or been given a question that assumed she was an invitee. The difference is, well, if you're an invitee, well, the jury can be entitled to conclude that you should have known about some dangerous condition. Well, there was no evidence by which a jury could have even concluded that she should have known that the floor was wet. As my opponent conceded, she was at work all day, Natalia Fernandez. There was no evidence that she asked Carolina Cortez to mop the floor, that she even knew that the floor was going to be mopped. The record cites that my opponent seeks to bring forward on that are just citations to her own petition. There was never any evidence at trial on that issue. It was directly to the contrary. The hand-picked pieces of testimony that they brought forward are insufficient. I do want to make a point about the partial reporter's record, because my opponent says, I didn't understand her argument on that, why she requested a partial reporter's record. I did hear her say she wanted to show that all of the evidence showed she was an invitee. Well, if you're going to do that, you need to bring forward a full, complete record of all of the trial proceedings. And my opponent didn't do that. She just brought forward hand-picked direct testimony from her client and just completely ignored all of the other testimony at trial from my client, her testimony on cross-examination, all of which supported the trial court's charge. But with respect to that partial reporter's record, she stated that the courts need to liberally construe the reporter's records and the court's records. I'm not really sure that that's the law, that you liberally construe those records, but still she was required to bring forth a full record, and she didn't do that. What I really thought she was going to say was that she satisfied the rules by making a request for a partial reporter's record, and that she came forward with a list of issues pursuant to Rule 34.6, you know, making this a limited appeal based on a partial record. But she didn't argue that. First of all, she didn't request a partial reporter's record. She really requested a reporter's record. That's what it's called, a request for a reporter's record, that was inadequate, that was incomplete. And so the other point I want to make with respect to the limited appeal, there was no limited appeal pursuant to Rule 34.6 because she never came forward with a statement of issues that she was going to limit her appeal to. What I thought my opponent was going to say is her notice of appeal satisfied that, but she never said that. But her notice of appeal didn't even do that because it never said that it did state some of the things some of the complaints, but she never came forward with a statement of issues that said, I am limiting my appeal to these issues. She never did that. So as a result of that, the contrary presumption arises that all of the evidence that was omitted, that she didn't bring forward, all of that evidence supports the trial court's judgment. I'd like to now address the joinder of Carolina Cortez because my opponent makes several arguments about that. I think it's important. I don't want to bore the court with a chronology, but I'm just going to just hit the highlights. The accident occurred on March 26, 2004. My opponent filed her lawsuit against my client on March 24th, 2006, on the eve of limitations, 2 years. So first of all, she had 2 years to find Carolina Cortez if she really thought she was a culpable defendant. Now, we gave her that information, the whereabouts of Carolina Cortez, on November 21st, 2006, the day after the trial court entered its initial scheduling order. Now, my opponent says that we didn't give her the address in the interrogatory. That is just false. And to show that, you just have to look at the record. She used that address that we gave to her to mail her the process. She used the address we gave her. There's no dispute in the record that we gave her Carolina Cortez's address in November of 2006. What did she do with that information when she got it? Well, she slumbered on her rights. She didn't file a motion for leave to join Carolina Cortez until 10 months later. So she slumbered on those rights. So she waited till she says that she, for 4 years, tried to join Carolina Cortez. No, she didn't file a motion for leave to join Carolina Cortez until 4 years and 4 months after the accident, 2 years and 4 months after she filed suit, and over a year and a half after we gave her the information. That's when she first sought a hearing on that. In the process, she blew through all of the trial court's deadlines in the scheduling orders. Three scheduling orders, she blew through each of the deadlines to amend pleadings to bring in another party. The last two of those scheduling orders that she missed the deadline on specifically said no additional parties may be joined without approval of the court. My opponent.
Let me ask something to clarify, though. At the time you provided Carolina's address in November of 2006, was there any requirement in any of the then existing scheduling orders to get leave to add a party? In other words, that's kind of at the beginning, well, almost the beginning of the lawsuit.
Right.
You probably had one scheduling order already in November 2006, would be my guess.
Right. No, that one did not.
Okay.
That one did not. But the next one on August 2nd, 2007, on page 41 of the record did.
Okay.
But we gave her that address, and it was a valid address. My opponent says, you didn't give me a good address, and you just, you know, jerked us around with that, and that is just false. And to prove that it's false, all the court has to do is look to page 111 of the clerk's record. And that is going to be the envelope, the return of service where the Secretary of State actually did serve her. She says that she served her at the address we gave her. So the whole argument that we never gave her the proper address is belied by the by her own return of service. We clearly did give her the proper address. I think that when the court looks, and with respect to Carolina Cortez joining her, the whole joinder issue, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. Because limitations had already ran with respect to Carolina Cortez. Now, my opponent says that, she moved out of state. No, she didn't move out of state until after limitations ran. If the court will look at pages 37 and 38 of the record, it'll see all that you need to see with respect to that. What you'll find is, again, the accident occurred on March 26, 2004, so limitations ran on March 26, 2006. Carolina Cortez, on page 38 of the record, she moved to Houston in December of 2004 and moved to North Carolina, this is on page 37, in July of 2006. So Carolina Cortez was living in Texas for 2 years and 4 months after the accident. She, limitations had already run, so it would have made no difference if she had joined Carolina Cortez, because she would have gone out on limitations, and so there was no harmful error. When the court looks at this record, it's going to see that Ms. Jones had all the time she needed to join Carolina Cortez as a defendant. It's going to see that she had every opportunity to object to the court's charge if she wanted to do that and obtain a ruling on the charge. This court's going to conclude and see that she failed to avail herself of those opportunities. The trial court has inherent authority to set reasonable deadlines, and my opponent doesn't even complain about any of those deadlines. She simply failed to comply with them. An abuse of discretion, that is the standard here. An abuse of discretion occurs when the trial court acts without reference to guiding rules or principles. In this case, the trial court in both instances acted entirely appropriately, and it certainly can't be said that the trial court in any way abused its discretion. The trial court's judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beard. Ms. Maher, rebuttal?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
First of all, the judge is the one who determined that Tammy Jones was a licensee. There was no issue given to the jury. If you look at the record, every single petition we have, and I think we had five petitions, the last one was struck right before the trial. On the motion to strike the petition, originally it wasn't even struck because the judge realized that the indication she gave was that the Carolina Cortez had to be served in order to have her in as a party. We had a motion to compel, and that's in the record. It's in the clerk's record. Natalie Fernandez deposition testimony. So we did not know at the time we took the deposition of Natalie Fernandez, Cortez, we did not know where Carolina Cortez was. And we're asking her, and I've got those excerpts in the motion to compel, along with the fact that we did send, when we finally got something from the initial disclosures, they didn't have anything down. They had her name. We went and took the deposition of Natalie Fernandez Cortez. We had the deposition where she doesn't know, and she couldn't find out where she was. As far as where she'd been, there's talk about being in Florida, as far as with her husband working in Florida. There's also talk about, her being in Houston. We don't know where she was, but she was finally served in North Carolina. But when we first got the address, it was vacant. So, at the time that we served her or attempted service, the Secretary of State did, there was no one living in that that building. As far as the deadline, the scheduling order, I think if the court looks at the scheduling order, all the things that are agreed in the scheduling order have dates for things to be done. At the end of it, where it says parties to be, no parties without leave of court, there's no deadline as far as bringing in parties in any portion of the scheduling order. At the end, when defense counsel knew that we were really trying to get Carolina Cortez based on the deposition and based on our motion to compel, that's when, after we signed off on it, I initialed the things that we made changes on, he handed it to the court and then asked the judge to put that in. And as far as her writing that in, as far as leave of court, well, we tried to get leave of court over and over again. We asked. We had motions for rehearing, trying to get leave of court to be able to bring in this party.
But what do you say in response to Appley's claim that the statute of limitations had already run against Carolina, so getting leave of court to bring her in wouldn't have done you any good?
Well, Your Honor, I believe as far as the statute of limitations is told when a person's out of state. And the indication was that, we have two states. We have Florida, and we also have North Carolina. She was served in North Carolina. We didn't have any evidence confirming the fact that she, was not out of state at the, she had moved 1 year after the incident, according to Natalie Fernandez's testimony, and that's in the record. So in that period of time, if she moved to North Carolina or Florida, she moved out of state, and the statute of limitations would have been told. The point is that we didn't have, like I said, the deadlines were complied with. There was no deadline regarding bringing in parties. We had to have leave of the court. The judge wouldn't give us leave of the court. And I think the death knell blow was when, at the time of the occurrence, Natalie Fernandez had to have actual knowledge. She didn't know. She did know that she was mopping the floor on a regular basis as far as Carolina Cortez when she was cleaning, but she didn't know at the time that Tammy Jones slipped and fell that Carolina was mopping. And so that was an impossibility. There was no way we could have proven our case. In fact, 5 minutes after the note went to the jury, the jury came out after 3 hours of deliberation before the note was answered. They came out in 5 minutes' time and said, well, no negligence against either party. So for those reasons, Your Honor, I believe that Tammy Jones, the case or the judgment should be reversed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Maher. Thank you, Mr. Beard. We appreciate your arguments today. We also appreciate all the briefing that both sides have prepared and submitted. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused.